Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of You Have Tread on Me. And tonight's show is Time for a Plan. We're going to be discussing the final part of the You Have Tread on Me document, and we're also going to continue on with our discussion about the committees of safety, the militia, the role they play, how we can actually begin implementing these, and what their purpose is. As I have mentioned... go ahead.
And we'll probably get sidetracked a little bit along the way and get talking about other things that might be appropriate to a plan, but we've got a lot of things that Randy and I have talked about in the past and thought about that constitute a plan, how to get our government back.
So along the way, you know, we had Joe Martino on last night, and we were discussing some of the aspects of his book, and he brought that up. Very clearly, he said, you need to know what your objective is, and you need to have measurable goals. Goals that can actually be measured, goals that you can say, we have achieved this goal, we're almost there, whatever. You need some way to be able to measure them. You needed an infrastructure. And there was a whole lot of other things that he said you needed in order to be able to say, I've got a plan. And if we look back in history, we find out that there was a plan a long time ago, and they laid it out for us. We just really have forgotten how to research and read and how to analyze information. So that's what this whole show is about. We're trying to lay out that information according to what the Founding Fathers said was lawful, and the whole purpose of the Constitution was for us to be able to engage our government and for that government to be lawful. And if it ever became unlawful or became oppressive or just no longer served the needs of the people, we could change it or correct it peacefully. They laid out a plan, and so that's what we're trying to lay out here. So welcome to the show, everybody, and shall we get this going, Gary?
Okay, let's get going. We quit last time after a couple of items. We're at item 26 out of 35 now, and then when we're done, we've got to go back and correct one. And Randy came up with some wording to substitute one that's been a problem for a long time, and Randy has a solution all the time. He just didn't tell me until 5 days ago.
I didn't even know I had it. And it wasn't even my solution. It was your solution. You just went too far, but...
He went through a couple pages of paper trying to solve the problem. Then he took an eraser and found most of the problem and then came back with a few words and completed the project. Anyway, we're on to legislation. And so the next item, that any and all enactments by the Congress shall, from this time forward, provide a statement as to which portion of the Constitution grants the government authority over the subject matter contained in the enactment, specifically explaining how that authority is derived. Oh, wow, that would be interesting. Randy, we've got a problem on my volume, I guess. You think I'd call back on the phone?
I can't do anything more with the volume. My volume is all the way up. Your volume is all the way up. I don't know what it is. It must be that convection oven you live in.
Let me call in on the line, and we'll see if we can correct the problem.
All right. Well, we're going to have Gary call in on the other line now and get off of Skype and call in on a regular phone and see if that clears up the mic problem.
Well, I'm going to stay on Skype just in case.
Oh, okay. We're going to stay on Skype, too, while we're here. If I seem a little bit off today, everybody, I'm sorry about this. I was up really late today helping a friend stock his liquor store because the government has decided how much he must pay somebody and how many hours minimum he must pay them. Even though he only needs somebody for about an hour and a half a day to help him stock his alcohol, he's forced to pay somebody an exorbitant rate that he can't afford because his sales are down 50% from last year. So I've been helping him stock his alcohol a couple of days a week so he can continue to stay in business and try and be one of those last surviving ma-and-pop operations. that we do have left in North America. We are, hang on one second, I'm having my own problems now. Sorry about that, we just seem to be having technical difficulties all over the place tonight. Let me see if Gary is on here. There he is. He just showed up. Hello, Gary, you there?
Yes. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Can everybody else out there hear Gary now? Anybody in the chat room comment on this, please? Hello to the world.
Hello, world. 1, 2, 3, 4. Can you hear me better? Is it any better now than it was?
Is it any better than it was, is what we're trying to find out. Much better. Okay, thank you, Equalizer.
Okay.
Now we can get on with the show.
So much for Skype technology.
Well, you're better on the phone than you are on Skype, so good to know.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll deal with that. Someday we'll get this working right. Anyway, then did y'all hear what? Let me just start over. That any and all enactments by the Congress shall, from this time forward, provide a statement as to which portion of the Constitution grants the government authority over the subject matter contained in the enactment, specifically explaining how that authority was derived. Now, that would let us know how they justified health care. Or they wouldn't justify health care. Next, that any and all enactments will stand alone and bear on a specific and singular object without riders, amendments that deal with matters that are not directly related to the titled subject. When I was reviewing the Crime Control Act of 1994, which was Cops on the Street, when I got to the end of this voluminous law, I noticed a few interesting little pieces in there. And being in Florida at the time, the one that I noticed most was a grant of $25,000 to an art school in Orlando, Florida. Now, I am not sure what $25,000 grant to an art school has to do with the Crime Control Act of 1994. My best guess is it bought at least one vote for the Crime Control Act. So if they're allowed to add amendments and riders to the bills that aren't related to the subject matter, they're in a position to buy votes by granting. Now, I've never looked into detail on what occurred, but my understanding, and I think it was the health care bill, that Louisiana was promised $225 million if they signed the bill. And then another state would not have to pay their premiums if their representatives went with the bill. So that's one of the tools that government has that is definitely to our disadvantage, that things will be given away with the intention of buying votes. Next item, that any federal enactment will not override or undermine or in any way discourage any legislation or referendum of a state of the Union which is exercising its right under Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. Now, Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution guarantees every state a republican form of government. It, coupled with the 9th and 10th Amendments to the Constitution, says that absent a specific grant of federal authority, the states have a right with their republican form of government to enact legislation that's amenable to the people of that state. And probably the best and most well-known examples are what are called the medical marijuana legislation, which California is one state that enacted it. And so the federal government comes in and busts people for growing pot. They bust doctors or take away doctors' licenses to prescribe medicine or practice medicine for prescribing marijuana. So they've got an undue influence on us because they can override the Republican form of government guaranteed, the only guarantee in the Constitution, and the will of the people in the respective states when they are outside of federal authorities granted. Next item, that all bills submitted to the House of Representatives and the Senate of the United States shall be read in their entirety, including the constitutional authority, when said bill is first introduced to the respective houses and just prior to voting on such bill. And the entire text of any such bill shall be made available to the public by publication in all major newspapers. What would that do to a 3,000-page health care bill? Could you imagine somebody having to read that twice in the House and twice in the Senate and publish it in a newspaper? Section 3 and 4 and 5 of the newspaper this week will be dedicated to publishing the health care bill. But at least we and they would know what was in it unless they slept through the reading. Next, for the purpose of reduction of the deficit and the debt incurred by previous Congresses, the House of Representatives shall enact no legislation which grants money that was otherwise unearned, i.e. welfare, block grants, etc., and shall adjust programs that reduce expenditures in domestic programs by 25% or more of the current year, each year, until said program is reduced to nothing, and that all grants, loans, or other payments to other nations, domestic organizations, non-domestic organizations, or entities shall cease at the end of the current fiscal year and not be reinstated until such time as the budget of the United States shall be balanced and there is no future encumbrance or obligation for repayment of any debt. Now, if you followed that, that means the government has to stop spending money until they have no debt. And they have to reduce programs that are existing, domestic programs, at a rate of 25% a year for 4 years until there's nothing going in. That allows people to transition out of their dependence on government. That we won't give any money to foreign nations or anything else. Basically, what's ours is ours. It's not theirs. And we can get the debt in order in probably 20 or 30 years that way, maybe even less.
You know what? Somebody in the chat room made a comment. They said, government earning money, wow, what an idea. You know, and for the first 100 or so years, our government did earn an income, or they earned money. They earned it through import and export taxation, through tariffs. Things coming in, things going out, and that's how government was paid for. We weren't taxed.
In 1910,
they didn't have the money to get it.
In 1910, before the income tax was enacted and before the Federal Reserve Act was enacted, the United States government, now they still had some debt, but it was short-term and it was relatively small. They had a cash surplus of $100 million. Now, in today's money, that would probably be about $2 billion. So they had $2 billion sitting in the bank waiting to get spent. Now, we haven't been there. I don't know when the last time we were even close to that was. But that's just it. The government can operate if it only performs its function. But when we start buying friendships around the world and votes in the United Nations, and when we start buying votes from legal and illegal people that are unwilling to work for a living by giving them money, food, housing, color televisions, it doesn't work, and that has to stop. Okay, next item. Congress shall enact laws which act upon entities, corporations, which are created by the government that will provide oversight into their operations to include limiting any corporation to act only within a limited scope or industry and not extend itself into areas where it has not been specifically authorized to conduct business. prohibit corporations from investing in other corporations, the stock market, securities, futures, or any other enterprise for the purpose of making a profit or creating a loss. Establish salary and benefit limits, including stock options, so as to limit the financial gain of the officers to reasonable amounts equitable to the productivity and profitability of the corporation. Require all corporations to provide benefit packages to employees that will enhance their future, including but not limited to health, retirement, and the welfare of their families. Prohibit importation of any goods, products, or materials from other countries unless unavailable within the United States. Prohibit outsourcing of any aspect of the business. Provide that no foreign or domestic corporation may hold stock in the corporation. And provide that no more than 10% of the shares of the corporation may be held by other than citizens of the United States. Now, that's a rather lengthy one, and it did generate some controversy. It's possible that that one could use some revising, and so we've got to think of whether it's appropriate as is or not. But understand that corporations are created by the government. What happens is you submit an application to the government, you submit your bylaws, I can't think of the name of it right now, but when you submit for a corporation, you say, we're going to make widgets. Now, if they say they're going to make widgets, that should be the limitation of their enterprise, making widgets. If they want to amend the corporate paperwork later and add basketballs along with the widgets, and the government accepts that, that's fine. But it doesn't. If it doesn't say that we're here to invest money in stock options or futures or anything like that, why allow them to do that? Because they will manipulate that for tax benefits, and they will make exorbitant profits sometimes in the exercise of taking these tax benefits. And when they do, generally, it will affect the cost of what you're paying for to from one of the subsidiaries of this corporation. And I'm going to give you a good example. Many years ago, there was, and I'm sure some of you will remember it, PIE, Pacific Intermountain Express, was the biggest trucking company in this country. Pacific Intermountain Express. They had black PIE in a big yellow oval as their symbol, and you saw trucks all over the country with the PIE logo on it. Some investors set up a corporation. They bought out PIE, and they bought some other corporations. Now, from a tax standpoint, they made money by closing PIE, and they made money by keeping open businesses that were failing. So we lost the most profitable truck transportation business in this country, and at the same time with our and they got the loss on that, which means that they didn't have to pay taxes for closing the business. And at the same time, then they're receiving all kinds of benefit for keeping a failing corporation open. That's manipulation of our economy, and it cannot happen without having an effect on us. So somehow, you know, when a corporation is created at the mercy of government, it has to abide by what it agreed to step into. Like I say, that needs some thought. Randy, you got any thoughts on that one? Randy, you there?
Hello? I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. I lost you there for a second. My phone, I'm having, I've got a rainstorm coming in here, it looks like. And I don't know. I'm having problems with my phone a little bit. Now, what were you saying? I'm sorry. My light started flickering and stuff. I lost track of this show.
Okay. The one that I just mentioned, do you have any thoughts on it?
I'm sorry. What was that last part that you mentioned, though?
The corporation one.
The corporation one. Yeah, actually, I do have a couple of comments on that. You know, when we look at the corporation aspect, and we look at the fact that the government is an artificial entity. It cannot create another artificial entity and give that entity natural rights. Corporations never, in our history, ever had personhood. They were never persons. You cannot give an artificial entity personhood. When you do, you give that entity rights, free speech, right to vote perhaps, right to bear arms, right to run for Congress even, or be president.
How about procreate?
Procreate, create new. And a lot of, you know, I'm for free markets. I am all for free markets. I'm more of a libertarian than anything else, even though I don't adhere to all the libertarian ideas, because they've got their own drawbacks and their own problems. When you look at the corporate aspects that we tried to put together here, we went back to what used to be in place before, when we started busting up all the monopolies like Standard, who started influencing the government way back when, and we broke them up. We put restrictions and limitations on them. They can't contribute to campaign funds. They're non-entities. They should not be influencing government.
Well, they do it is strictly for economic favor at our expense, both on the paying the money that will go to them to buy the favor and the money that it will cost the government or us because they were granted that favor.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, if you look at all the things that, you know, that seem anti-corporation, the laws that are being passed, like these greenie laws and the carbon laws, they're not, it's not hurting the corporations. Because none of them are here anymore. They're all in countries that are going to get paid to produce carbon, so who's going to get paid to produce this carbon? The corporations that are going to be, that are supposedly getting hurt by it anyways. So the things that we enacted here are meant to limit and restrict the powers of corporations. They should have no power. They used to be enacted for a single purpose, to build a car, you know, to build cars or build a bridge. Any short-term project like building a bridge or building a home, the investors would go into the corporation, put their money together, build that bridge, collect revenue, make profit, hopefully, and get out. Any new project would require a new corporation. No problems. No power. Here today, gone tomorrow. Those that were more lasting, who created actual products, who manufactured, those continued to stay, but they had to show that they served a benefit to the community. So, for instance, you don't get days like where Rockefeller was going in and brought in the State Guard to start killing off union members. Well, who's going to let that corporation stay in power anymore? They have not served. They have served no benefit. They're killing people. They must prove that they are not causing harm to the community in which they live, and the community can then get rid of them. For instance, all those Walmarts that came into town and put everybody out of business in towns of 50,000 people. How many people would love to get rid of the Walmart now? But they can't.
No, and that's the dilemma, is we've got corporations now, and we can't just say you're gone. But if we hold them to the fire as far as their responsibilities and enact some other things. And a good example, Walmart. When Sam Walton opened the Walmart store and Sam's warehouse, you walked in the store or the warehouse and everything was American-made. And the employees received stock in the company as it prospered and gained from that prosperity. After Sam Walton died, his children got greedy. And now it's hard to find much of anything of any significance in size. I mean, batteries and light bulbs, yes, but maybe not even light bulbs anymore. But everything now is made in China. And, you know, if you were put back into doing its original job, and if that charter said buy American, then it should be by American at least, but you can't just get rid of them, so it creates a perplexing problem. At least you can't get rid of them right away. I would eventually like to see corporations go back to what they were many years ago, which is what something Randy and I have looked into recently.
So, you know, these are things that we had in the past. And not only that, but part of the entire idea of restoring our country to a prosperous country for ourselves is ensuring that we have some kind of manufacturing established in this country. So we need to reestablish manufacturing here locally, but we don't need
another form of corporate feudalism springing up again. And let's not forget that Carol Quigley, in his book, Tragedy and Hope and the Anglo-American Establishment, he said, what is coming is a new form of corporate, is a new form of feudalism, a corporate feudalism, with corporations as the overlords and their keepers above them. He was a historian for the CFR.
I understand what I just read. They cannot buy products from out of the country that are available in this country. Initially, they might not be available, but given that condition, it would behoove industry in this country to go back and produce the widgets so that they could be sold, because once they were available in this country, Walmart could not buy them in that country. By the same token, they cannot outsource. Now, outsource is a dirty word. It didn't exist 100 years ago, but now it's become a way of life. And it does nothing but hurt our economy by sending money overseas or to other countries, which means that we've got to offset that imbalance of trade and that flow of money out, and that we've put up with inferior goods that don't meet the quality standards that we would expect in this country, which is true of drywall and many dog food and many other things that have come out of China. So going
You know, when we can no longer provide for our own needs, and when we do not produce anything except laws and attorneys, and we import everything, we have destroyed our ability to survive as a nation, as a society, as a people. That's what happens when you stop producing.
And as
you
much
come,
as
you become.
The media tells you that is the course we were on, and we are on a fast track to that destruction right now.
Exactly, you know, and look at all the deregulation has caused. Now, I do believe in free markets. I do not believe that if you take a job knowing you're going to handle pork, and then after you get the job, you start enforce religious doctrine to get out of handling pork. No. I believe in the law of free association. If you took this job knowing you had to handle pork, you handle the pork, and if you don't like it, go find another job. That's what the job entails. If you don't like it, you can find another job. You know, we don't need laws like that. I'm not talking about regulation like that. I'm talking about control over just not giving corporations the ability to determine policy and the direction of our country anymore. I want free markets. We don't have free markets. We have a very controlled market now, controlled by other corporations and our government. You and I cannot engage in free trade anymore. Trying to get back to that.
This is a positive outsource suggestion. Outsource Congress back to local control and decisions. That I'll go along with. That's not really outsourcing. That's really insourcing, isn't it? Putting it back where it belongs instead of taking it out of the people's hands.
I always thought it was in the local, you know, at the local level. Congress was controlled by us because they were our delegates to the federal, you know, they were the delegates that we elected. Therefore, they were for the control of the people.
That was while you were sleeping. You're awake now. You know that that doesn't work that way, right?
Oh, the history books keep lying to me, though.
Well, the next one is an example of Congress's contempt for us and the Constitution. When the Bill of Rights was submitted to the states, there were 12 items on the list that was submitted, of which 10 were adopted and ratified and became the Bill of Rights. One of those is now the 27th Amendment. It reads, "No law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened." Now, representatives are every 2 years, every even-numbered year they're elected into office. That means if this Congress votes to give themselves a pay raise, it doesn't go into effect until the next Congress. Now, why did they do that? Because if we knew that they just gave themselves a raise in this economy, they wouldn't go back to get it. It would serve them no good, because we would say, no, the economy sucks. It's your fault. You gave yourselves a raise. We'll put somebody else in there. Now, the way this went, that was the 27th Amendment. Now, that the ratification of the 27th is an interesting story, but we'll not go into that right now. I think when we decide to do a program on the missing 13th Amendment, the Titles of Nobility Amendment, it's more appropriate because it was because of the 13th Amendment that the 27th was ratified. But to, as far as the purpose of the petition, it says, Congress shall abide by the intent of the 27th Article and Amendment to the Constitution and shall repeal any law contrary to that intent and shall not create any pension, benefit, medical coverage, except while in office, that is subsidized by the government unless that same program is available to all citizens of the United States. I think I can hear the applause on that one. That would say that Congress cannot give them free haircuts and all this other stuff that they take for granted. Their permanent retirement. Now, interestingly, the Constitution says the Congress shall be compensated for their services. Now, if I'm compensated for the services, that's either hourly or a salary, and that's only when I work. It doesn't count those times that I'm not working, that I'm not that I'm retired, when I quit, if I quit the job, if I'm fired from the job. But the way it works in Congress now is if you serve one day in Congress and then go to prison the next day, you still have full retirement for the rest of your life, full medical for the rest of your life, and all kinds of other benefits and perks.
Yeah, that needs to go. You know, $200 haircuts need to go.
This would require on our backs
need to go. You don't need a $200 lunch.
No, you don't need that jet that Pelosi flies around. And John Adams had to hire a coach to go take his office as president. Why did he have to hire a coach to do that? Shouldn't the government provide it? Now, he's not Congress. Now, if the president then had to hire a coach to go to office, do you think that they provided carriages for free to the members of Congress, lesser positions? No, they had a responsibility, and they received compensation for their services. And out of that compensation, just like you or me, you have a job that's salaried or hourly. You don't get paid to drive to and from work. They don't give you a car to drive to and from work. And if they do give you a car to drive to and from work, the IRS is going to tax that as income. So why should Congress have all these benefits? Now, the 27th Amendment, what they did, and I just posted did I post it yet? A link to there's a link to an article on the 27th Amendment, if it'll go. Come on, go. What they did, and the court acknowledged this, that they passed a law when they knew the 27th was going to be ratified. They passed a law that granted to Congress, both houses, a raise every year unless Congress turned it down. Now, that violates the intent of the amendment. They were pushing for ratification, and that's why we'll talk about it with the 27th Amendment, or Titles of Nobility Amendment. They're pushing to get this amendment ratified. They blew the dust off from 1789 or 92. They blew the dust off and said, let's ratify this, but at the same time they passed a law that gives them perpetual raises unless they turn it down. The intent is to give the people a choice. If they give themselves a raise, let us decide if they're doing a good enough job to warrant that raise. Instead, they vote themselves perpetual raise, basically saying, pardon my expression, but it's the only one I can think of that fits. Fuck you people. I can't think of anything else that Congress was trying to tell us when they passed that perpetual raise just weeks before the 27th Amendment was ratified. So this would require... Pardon?
Something else I'd like to point out, though, with the politicians and their pay.
You know, when most of these congressmen go into Congress, they are so up to their ears in debt, it's not even funny. Most of them have liens and loans and you name it, bankruptcies in their past. And then all of a sudden, when they get into Congress, they become multimillionaires. Multimillionaires in a very few short years. And they do it by stealing your productivity, your property, your labor. So they make themselves rich by taking everything from you. That's what the 27 does, and that's what our government has been doing.
And one way they do that is, for example, sending $25,000 to an art school in Orlando, Florida, and getting $2,500 back from the art school. The art school doesn't mind. They get $22,500 for free. They'd be glad to kick back to the congressman. So you can see that the elements that we've written into the petition work together to break the back of a lot of the practices that have gone on in Congress for a long time. Okay, now we're going to the next subject, elections. That the Congress shall enact legislation which provides for, let me back up just a minute, make sure you understood that, shall not create any pension, benefit, medical coverage, except while in office, that is subsidized by the government unless the same program is available to all citizens. Pension. That gets rid of their pension. That puts them on Social Security with us if they want a pension. And that means they have to pay into Social Security to get out. And any other benefit, if it's subsidized by the government, is out of the picture. Okay, now going on to elections. That the Congress shall enact legislation which provides for fair access to all elections by removing any enactments, laws, or rules which give favor to any political party over another political party or individual seeking office, and shall limit the fees required to such offices not to exceed $1,000 for any state office and $5,000 for any federal office under authority of Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1 of the Constitution. That takes away the primaries. What are we going to do without primary elections? You mean we might have more than two choices come election day? It should have that effect. Next, the Congress shall prepare for presentation to the states of the Union an amendment to the Constitution which would provide for the states to repeal the 17th Amendment to the Constitution, and if they so desire, by ratification of said amendment, return to the state legislators the authority to select the senators of their choice. See, a lot less Ted Kennedy's if the state started selecting the senators again like they did until 1913. That amendment, the 17th, by the way, was enacted in 1913 along with the 16th Amendment, which is the income tax amendment, along with the Federal Reserve Act. That was a bad year for America. And finally, the Congress shall enact a law regarding campaign contributions which will limit any contribution to a single candidate to $200. Yep, $200. That contributions can only be made by citizens of the United States, and that corporations, political parties, unions, and other organizations are not provided freedom of speech by the Constitution and are disqualified and subject to criminal penalties for any contributions or any activities which are intended to influence the outcome of any election. Now, that one would put everybody on a fair basis for election. If you can get 1 million people, you get $200 million. If you get 500,000 people, you get $100 million. That's your campaign coffer. No corporations, no unions, not even political parties, because remember the other day we talked about political parties cannot influence the elections. So now we've got elections that are going to be funded solely by citizens of the United States. Nobody else can contribute to campaigns, and a rich man can't throw $20,000 in. He can throw $200 in. That's it. That gives everybody about the same volume of voice under the article, First Amendment to the Bill, first article of the Bill of Rights, freedom of speech. If you're poor enough that you can't afford $200, then you'll have to whisper instead of yell. But everybody will be yelling at the same volume. So a rich guy will not influence the Congress to the point that he receives economic favor as a consequence of a substantial contribution to a campaign. That's it. That's the petition. Any comments, anybody? Randy?
I have lots of comments on that, Gary. You know, what I'd like to do is remind everybody that what we're doing is we're not trying to create something different. We're trying to reinforce what was. We're trying to go back to the structure before the centralization of the U.S. took over, get rid of the laws that were brought in that basically enslaved us and gave all power to corporations and Congress and the President and the Supreme Court. Take that power and revert it right back to its rightful owners, we the people, through federal grand juries that must be enacted within 30 days with 0.01% of a population stepping forward and petitioning for one. The reestablishment of the committees of safety, the most vital aspect in our society, in our culture. 800 years of culture.
That's not without in the petition, though.
What's that?
That's not
no,
in
no,
the petition.
No, the petition isn't, but But specifically about that petition, and also, this petition is very much reminiscent of the Olive Branch petition of 1775. Now, if you don't know what that is, that was where we made our final stand. We said enough. Agree to our terms, or we're done with you. That's what this is. It's an overall plan, and this petition is our end goal, our end objective. This is what we're trying to reach towards.
Now, I understand that everything in here is either forcing Congress back to what we perceive the intent of the Constitution to be, not what the Supreme Court refuses to act on, nor the way the congressmen think that the Constitution applies, but as we perceive it. And believe me, what we've talked about has been supported by history, by the writings of the founders or the practices of the day. There are a few exceptions to that, where, for example, corporations, since corporations weren't granted then, if they're granted now, they stick to their charters. If I tell you I'm coming in your house to clean your windows, but I'm coming in to steal your property, there's something wrong here. If you clean the windows, you have a right to come in my house. But if you're going to steal my property, you don't. Now, corporations, if they're coming in to clean your windows, that's fine. If they're coming in to steal your property, it's not. They've declared in their articles of incorporation what their purpose is, and if they don't abide by it, they lose their corporate status, period. They're gone. They no longer exist. So there's
nothing. Imagine what customers would be like then.
Pardon?
But imagine what customer service would be like then if they were actually held accountable for their actions.
Well, same thing that would happen to medical care if we got mandatory insurance out of the way.
They might actually go back to treating the people instead of prescribing the drugs. So that's that as far as the document goes. If you have any questions on that, any input, any suggestions, please feel free to email us. hunt@outpost-of-freedom.com or randymack@uofthreatenme.com.
Okay, somebody
now, what are we
doing? Where is the petition? I'm posting the... Oh, somebody else beat me to it. Okay, there's the link for the petition. Now, it's going to go through some minor changes. Do not print that one. Do not use that one. Within a couple of weeks, we'll have a revised petition. This one was drawn hastily in an effort to try and get them out for the first Tea Party last year. We found grammatical errors. We found some other things that need correction. So read it, but don't download it. Don't circulate it as is. We will get a new one out, and it'll have something in the heading that indicates that it's the final petition or the revised petition or something to that effect. Go there and read it. If you have any comments, give them to Randy or I. If you want to talk about it, let us know. We'll give you a call and talk about it. But remember, don't do anything at this point with it. But within 2 weeks, we will have the petition cleaned up and posted back on the page. And we'll probably have it posted, from what I'm hearing from other people now, probably at 20 or 30 places just for a start. Then all we have to do is get people to sign the petition and get it to the Congress critters, all three of them. You have two senators and a representative that represent are supposed to represent you. Let's stack your desk high with these things. And
We had a comment in the chat room I'd like to comment on. And they said, do we think the government is actually going to read this petition? So I would like to go into the purpose of petitions and what the purpose of this petition is.
Well, let me read something first. It's an introduction to what you want to talk about. I had sent the petition out, and I followed it up with a number of short articles about Under One Banner petition. Now, there's a lady, Jackie Junta, in Washington, and she's been working in the Washington state government for most of her life. She's an officer in the Washington Employees Union. She's very savvy on political matters. Well, when I first put the petition out, here's some of the responses. First, this was an excellent idea and a well-written petition. Next, having only read the first page, it is fantastic. Next, thank you. This is absolutely brilliant. I hope this will go viral and we will soon be hearing of its impact. Next, your petition is the best I have ever seen. Next, I don't know who wrote these up, but I think they're great. Obviously, somebody put a lot of time and effort in the writing. And finally, and this is my favorite, this is from Jackie Junta, Washington Government Employees Network. Whoopee! Finally, a petition I can endorse and participate in. Readers know that I have nothing to do with any online petition, as they are a waste of energy and they do nothing, except make folks think that they have done something, and then they can go back to their snoozing. Having been deeply involved in political offices over my years, I know that all these things just get a glance as they are tossed to the side. Original signatures are the only thing that counts to a politician, not internet characters. I hope readers will read the following and then act on it. We have their attention right now, but do not sit back and let the fire die out. The enemy is now recruiting at the colleges for activist youths who haven't had to earn their way yet and will be taken in by the printed worthless money offered for their time. After you have read this and done your part, please send this to all you can. Also, print it off and hand it out at your meetings, and leave copies on tables at the coffee shop. Post it on your message boards and websites. Better to fire off this kind of weapon now, because I do not believe that firing of another kind is not far down the road. Now, Jackie, when I spoke with her, she also pointed out that when you have a written petition where you've got 100 signatures on a page, they're tossed aside too, unless there's a lot of pages. This calls for one signature. On the petition, when you sign it, you give your name as petitioner, and then it's got seal, which means that it's kind of a self-notary. Then the county and the state and the date, and that's all you need. You don't have to be a registered voter to sign this. You have to be a citizen of the United States of America, either one of the types of citizens. But by one signature per page, if they get 1,000 signatures, it's not going to be 10 sheets of paper. It's going to be 1,000 sheets of paper.
Well, it's going to be more than that because the document is a couple pages long, so they're going to be getting several thousand.
Because there's a PDF on there. It is small type, but still legible unless your eyes are as old as mine, that is two-sided. You print it out, print one side, and then run it back through and print the other side so you got a single sheet with the entire petition on it. It's a PDF file. But again, don't download that now. We're going to correct the petition and get it back out, and believe me, you'll know when it's time to go. Now, Randy, do you want to handle why do the petition? Will it work, or do you want me to handle it?
Oh, no, I'll handle that one. You know, why do the petition? Okay, we got to remember, okay, the petition basically gives us an end goal objective. This is what we're trying to get towards. You know, as Joe mentioned last night on the show, when he was talking about his book, Resistance to Tyranny, you must have an end goal objective. This is what we are trying to strive towards. From there, you start breaking it down to what you need to achieve the goals. Now, the petition in itself is just a piece of paper. We know this. We get it. They ignore all petitions. The idea isn't the petition in and of itself. We are not relying upon the petition or their acceptance of the petition. That's the misconception here. But the petition is a tool to be used. Every petition they get that has been sent registered mail by fax or hand-delivered is time out of their day that they have to engage in accepting that petition. And if we start mailing these in tens of thousands at a time, they pile up in the office, they take up space, they become a nuisance and a hassle. And it also gives them a physical reminder every time that they have to deal with these of how many people are getting upset with them and how many people are taking action. This is not like a single petition with a whole bunch of pages, you know, with a nicely bound with a bunch of pages with a bunch of signatures. Each one of these represents a person. There are no multiple signatures per petition. There is one signature per petition. So when these things start piling up on them, it serves as a constant reminder that they have gone against the will of the people.
And unlike
now,
most,
eventually,
unlike
when
most
we
petitions,
realize that...
Unlike now, most petitions, this is not a single-issue petition. This is a solution to our problems. It's very comprehensive. It's got 35 points. It's not, we want you to let dogs run free without a leash.
Exactly. Not a problem. Now, while we are submitting these petitions, we are also engaging in productive action. We are reestablishing committees throughout the U.S. Already, the action in just the short few days since we've really begun promoting the committees again has been phenomenal. We have committees that are going to start being formed in 74 counties in Ohio. We have PA that is jumping on board. In fact, a governor candidate for Pennsylvania has made an open call to action on his website and has posted the information that we posted about the committees of safety on his website. He's calling for everybody in every county to begin forming their own committees. This is a gubernatorial candidate in Pennsylvania that's doing this. Texas, all over, we are beginning in just a few short days. People have begun to really look at this, and they're already acting upon it. So in the meantime, we start establishing the civil authority because they're not going to listen to this document or this demand. Now, if we get luck, you know, if they decide that, wow, we've received tens of millions of these, hundreds of millions of these, they might. Chances are they won't. So in the meantime, we start creating and building our infrastructure in case they don't. And then our committees of safety, once they're well established on the county and state levels, they can then begin deciding locally what the solution is going to be. During that time, we also begin really establishing lawful militia who are recognized by the county committees of safety and make them lawful because now they're recognized by a civil authority. And this is the plan the Founding Fathers laid out for us, and they said this is what needs to be done. This is the purpose of the Tuesday show, to start laying out this plan. Because in the meantime, if things go great, and this document is accepted by Congress, and it is acted upon in whatever shape or form, we have our committees built now, and we can continue to exert our social force, our social will, and our social force upon the government, because the committees, the first branch of government,
The branch that all other branches of government are subordinate to are now established and functioning again. For 100 years, we kept our freedom in this country because of the committees of safety and the militia. Say we go back to what worked, because what we've done in the last 200 years has, or 100 and some odd years, has not worked at all. So there's my rant.
JTS Grandma, Grandmom, petition for redress of grievance is the way it's worded. This is a petition, and it's for redress of grievance. That's a description of what we're doing. It's not a demand for redress of grievance. We don't want to redress the grievance. We want to set forth the demands. That's what the petition does. Now, I've just posted a link there, unlike any other government. If you want to go to that link and go down near the bottom, you'll be, see something titled The Process. Now, I'm going to have to say this because I don't think Randy feels comfortable saying it, but if we want to, if we get enough petitions going in, and everybody, including me, supposes that the government will not abide by this petition, they're going to tear it up and throw it away. But they're not going to forget that it was on their desk. Now, is there any way to enhance in their minds the fact that we mean business? Yeah, there probably is. I gave you a link. I told you where to go to start reading. If some Congress people, especially those that come out vocally against this petition, what a piece of garbage, we couldn't possibly do this. If that person happened to die of an instant case, a sudden onset of lead poisoning in the middle of the night, his friends would look around and say, damn, it's unhealthy to not listen to these people. Is there anything wrong with elements of force being imposed upon the government to get them to understand that we're pissed off? Well, let me ask you, if tarring and feathering tax collectors years before April 19, 1775, was that application of force with trying to get England to listen to the grievances that the colonists were trying to explain to them? How about tearing down houses, tearing down tax collection warehouses? People died as a consequence of some of these activities. I don't doubt, and I haven't run across it, but I don't doubt that there were some tax collectors that were probably hung by their neck until they were dead. So the idea is to get the government first to recognize that we're serious this time. And that's why this isn't one issue. This is it, buddies. You got to do all of this. You got to give us our country back. And if you don't, beware of the consequences. Now, the beauty of this is, the other side of the beauty, and as I said, I think most of us fully expect, and I've seen a couple people say it on the chat, that they're going to just throw it in the trash can and say, screw you. They won't forget it. But those of you that have signed this petition and your friends that have signed this petition might learn, as did a lot of the people that thought there was a peaceful solution, the people that felt there was a peaceful solution in dealing with England back in 1775 when they submitted the Olive Branch peace petition. When it was rejected by the Crown, those that felt that there was a peaceful resolution of the problem between the colonies, and this is after Lexington and Concord, it was July 1775. Those that believe that there's a peaceful resolution of the problems with England, they might still believe it, but they wouldn't dare say it out loud because they thought they put their whole faith in the Olive Branch petition. And when the Crown ignored it, didn't even respond to it, any argument they had for peaceful solution was lost. So if we have 3 million people sign this, and Congress ignores it, what is the message to those 3 million people? There is no peaceful solution. Now, of those, perhaps 50% are brave enough to do something about the problem. That's 1.5 million people to get the ball rolling. And as happened 230 years ago, as the ball begins to roll, more and more people are willing to participate in restoring the rights of Englishmen to the colonists in the United States. So it is a double-edged sword, more than anything, as it was back then, in 1775. It's the last chance. It's not, don't pass Obamacare. It's bringing, hopefully, all of the patriot community under one banner. Because if you read Divide and Conquer, we are so diverse. I listed, I think, 43 different things that we're involved in. And if each one of those 43 had 20,000 people, and they all came together, we'd have 860,000 people instead of 43,000 people. Well, 860,000 is a heck of a lot more impressive than 43,000. So the under one banner is for that reason. If we work together under one banner, we have mustered our forces together and gone after the government that's stealing our children's birthright and our grandchildren's birthright and their money, what they earn with trading their life of labor for products. We're giving it back to them. Our posterity is depending upon us to do something. So the whole purpose behind this petition is to get as many people as possible involved in this when we're ready to go. Now, I will say that when we put this out last year, we got some good responses. I read you some of them. But it didn't get the coverage that we've got now. People weren't as pissed off as they are now. We didn't have Obamacare. We didn't have the government owning General Motors. We didn't have the government bailing out all these banks. We didn't have all these things that are going on now. So that year, a little over a year, has created enough more aggravation. And people that couldn't quite digest this idea a year ago are gobbling it down now. So the time perhaps has come for our olive branch petition to those on the Potomac in Washington, D.C., to say it's time to put up or shut up. You either put up with this and abide by this, or we will shut you up. Now, if you go to the process, as I said, it begins to talk about a process, which is what Joe Martino was talking about last night. Some of us have been thinking of a transitional plan, and you know, camos might come in handy, but more than likely, it's not going to be done in camos. In fact, camos will probably make you too conspicuous. It's not bad to have them if the need arises, but it's also not bad to have you. Camos are clothes that blend you into the environment. Sometimes a shirt and tie will blend you into an environment a lot better than camos. If we're going to fight a defensive action against the government, we are right now. They're not attacking us, so we have no need to be defensive. So we can sit back and do our target practice and everything. But if this petition fails and we decide that the time has come, in accordance with the Declaration of Independence, we have recognized that duty to replace that government to one of our own choosing, then we will be fighting an offensive battle. That offensive battle will be directed at a number of things that we will go into as far as what I've mentioned as a plan, and you'll get an introduction in what's called the process. It doesn't stop there. There are things that are necessary. For example, if the government wanted to make us look bad by cutting down food supplies and blaming it on the patriots, then we have to take on the responsibility of making sure the food supplies aren't cut down and the flow of food to the local grocery stores continues. And when the government says it's our fault, And then the people find out that we're the ones that are making the food get to their grocery store. Then the government begins to look bad in even more eyes, and maybe more people will join us. But we have to look at a lot of things, transportation, communication, public utilities. We can't let those be controlled by government as a means to manipulate a demonization of the Patriot community. So I can see militia units all over the country being assigned a responsibility to make sure this train switching yard operates well and the product flows, that the trucking terminals stay open and the product flows, that the communication systems, the phone companies, major stations stay open so that people can communicate, that the sewer systems and the water systems remain operational. We take it upon ourselves to protect these public entities. Not much different that was done by the founding fathers during the early days of the revolution. They had to make sure. The best example, Boston was under siege. All the food coming into Boston when shipping was British military ships, and it was for the British troops. There was a black market. They were selling some food, but very little was coming from outside of Boston, and it was restricted. But finally, a flow began. Committees of safety throughout that region were gathering blankets, firewood, chickens, pigs, food, grains, and shipping them to Boston. Now, Gage couldn't stop the flow of food in. It would have been outrageous. They tried to control it as much as they could, but when it started flowing across Boston Neck, which from my understanding at the time was about 18 feet wide, they had no choice but to let it flow in because he was caught with the same thing. If he stopped it, the people in Boston will be outraged. And when your family is starving, you might do anything, even take on the British Army. So they had to let it flow. It flowed because the committees of safety collected and distributed the food through Boston Neck to Boston. The British were tearing down buildings, fences, everything to fuel the fires during the winter. The Patriots were even sending wood in some cases. They were sending old wagons that could be torn apart to provide fuel for fires. And if we look at the role then and the role that we will have now, we have the same obligation. We have to make sure that people are fed, they're warm, that they don't die of cold, that they have good sanitation. Whatever is necessary becomes an obligation on the Patriot community. So a militia unit might be assigned, this is your job, you stay here, make sure that stuff flows. So this begins to get into this whole idea of having a plan to get back by government. And that's as far as I want to go this evening on it. But I want you to understand, when you read the process, that's just the beginning. We have thought out a plan that will carry us all the way back to constitutional government without violent transition. There might be violent confrontations, but there will be no violent transition back to government. It can all be mapped out. It can all be planned. And it can all be accomplished. And if the government is not willing to go back to the Constitution and we find the burden falls upon us, as long as we're willing to take it. Now, one thing that's easily understood by somebody 18 or 20 or 22 years old is you're immortal. I went to Vietnam. I was going to die there. Shortly after that, I started wondering if I was ever going to reach 32, then 50. And thank God I'm almost to 65 now. But I keep looking up in stages. Back then, I was going to live forever. There is a consequence to assuring that your children will have what they have every right to have, that we should have had the right to have, but it was being diminished in our lifetimes. And we know about it. So our obligation to our posterity is the same as it was on those in 1775, 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, and 81. That many will die if we go the hard way. So I don't like that idea, and you don't. We do need young people to carry that banner, but at the same time, we have to recognize what the consequences might be. But the plan that we're going to be talking about in the weeks to come is one that hopefully will minimize the loss of innocent blood and patriot blood. In fact, it will be directed at preserving as much as possible the lives of innocents and patriots. It will not have the same regard for those who have been the forces that have taken our liberties away from us. I got to take a break now.
No, you go ahead and take a break, Gary.
No, I'm not going to go anywhere. I just got to pass it on to you for a while.
That's what I meant. All right, so what do we do from here? Where are we going from here? I've posted them on RAM, and I've posted them on well-regulated American militia so far. I'm going to post them in my forum here shortly, tonight, in fact. There's a blog or a discussion I posted on RAM. It's several links. And I would encourage everybody, if you haven't read them on RAM already, wellregulatedamericanmilitia.com, I will post them tonight on my forum. You can find the link at the top of the website. I'm going to post them in the forum. I would recommend that people begin reading about the committees of safety, find out what they truly were. As I've mentioned before, they have been written out of our history for the last 150 years or so. To the point now where I look into an international dictionary and there is no mention of the Committees of Safety, except for some French group calling themselves the Committees of Protection and Safety.
No, they weren't Committees of Protection. I've commented on that. Committees of Protection were in this country, and they were primarily concerned in the wilderness areas, protection against Indians, and so they were called Committees of Protection. The French only had Committees of Public Safety.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, I'm sorry. That is correct, I'm sorry. Public safety, the brain is getting addled here. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I've had very little sleep and...
yeah, and I'm kind of worried. I've
got uncharged batteries here, so excuse the snafu of wording there. Yes, Committees of Public Safety, I'm sorry. The only mention that an international dictionary even had of anything even similar was the Committees of Public Safety. Now, they did give the Committees of Correspondence, the group started by Samuel Adams, which was the communication network between the committees of safety. They gave them about a three-sentence paragraph. You don't find them in the history books anymore. They're deleted from Disney movies. All mention of them is being deleted from Disney movies. Who they are, what they are. They're gone. So I would recommend you read those. I'll have those posted here shortly after the show is done in our forum. And feel free to post them everywhere else. You know, this is not my thing. This is not Gary's. This is the We the People's thing. This was our most powerful branch of government, We the People's civil authority. If you haven't yet, really, seriously, if you're in a militia currently, and you truly are past your prime, and you do not, or you know for a fact that you are not able to hump that pack anymore, and you understand the Constitution, trust me, your services are better, your skills are better served serving in a committee of safety. Unless, of course, you happen to be the trainer, the tactics trainer, firearms trainer, whatever it is. Please don't leave your militia, then you're in such short supply. But for all those others, you can serve a vital role in a committee of safety in your area. Excellent groups to start approaching about the committees of safety was a couple of groups that Equalizer from Ohio Minutemen Militia brought up, the VFW and the Legion. Somebody else in the room, Eddie Matthews, mentioned that he belongs to a couple of veterans organizations. Approach them. Ask them. You served, you fought for our country's freedom once before on foreign soil. Will you step forward and fight again for America's freedom on our own soil this time? And start explaining to them the concepts of the committees of safety. If you have problems or you don't quite understand them, feel free to give us a call or email us. Either one of us, we'll help you out there. If you get a group together and you'd like to, and you really don't know how to present it as well as it could be, and there's questions, let us know. We'll schedule a conference call with everybody. We'll make it happen. And eventually, as more and more people really get comfortable with the committees of safety and familiar with them, we'll have a lot of people out there teaching other people about them, and it can begin to grow. But it's going to take those first few people really learning and understanding them.
Now, what Randy said, too, about committees of safety, and I was mentioned earlier that we've got to make sure that the transportation flows and things work. It's not going to be the militia that says this trucking terminal has to stay open and we have to make sure that it stays open. It's going to be the committee of safety that makes that determination in working with other committees that this has to stay open. And then probably some delegates from that committee of safety will go to the trucking company and say, look, you need to stay open. And they're going to say, well, what makes you tell us we have to stay open? And they're going to point outside and see all these militia guys out there doing their job as soldiers, not as diplomats. And that separation is pretty powerful if you think about it. If the militia commander goes up there, you got a warlord going up and saying, we're going to take over your trucking terminal. But you have a couple guys in shirt and tie go up there and say, we're going to protect your trucking terminal, but you will keep it operating. And they say, well, by what authority? And you point to the militia. They'll keep the trucking terminal open. So if you can begin to understand how important the role, especially for those that cannot go on tactical missions, the importance of the role and their military experience, their knowledge, and their working with other committees is to achieving the goal with the least damage at all to our side. That's a more important role than the militia. It might not be as fun. John Adams regretted the entire time that he was stuck making words while other people made battle. So was John Hancock, come to think of it. He wanted to be general of the army. But you understand, without John Adams, I mean, his words were moving to people. Very important. But he always told Abigail, I wish I was out there fighting with them. Had he gone out and gotten killed, we might not have gotten where we got to. The people that wear the suit and shirt and tie, I don't wear suits anymore, I do wear shirts and ties, but those people are more important than the militia because they're the ones that have to make the pieces come together properly. It's not just a matter of shooting people. It's restraint, it's influence, it's pressure, it's design, any number of things that have to be incorporated into this to make it work peacefully. So those of you who aren't too old, come on. Committee of Safety. Get out and do it. Find your neighbors. Get them together. Create a Committee of Safety. As you get them, go to committee.org or email Randy or I or the email address to committee.org. There's a place in there. Is there a committee in your state? You go to the state. We had them set up back in the 90s, but every time we get contact information on a committee, it will be posted there. That way people can find you. And what good is the Committee of Safety if it's hiding? It also, we had a guy from New Jersey. He had 8 or 9 pages. Anytime you give us anything that's consistent with Committee of Safety to post on your page, you'll have your own page with the contact information. But if you want to post articles that you've written or anything else, as long as they're consistent with the role of Committees of Safety, you've got a web page with unlimited space, 1,000 sheets if you want. But this is that becomes, in a sense, I had another item on there at one time when I was able to do a chat type thing back in the early days of front page, Microsoft front page, and then my server went away from Windows because of hacking, and I don't have it now, but we're looking at trying to get something back up. But we called it a Liberty Tree. It was a place where you could go in and post notes. I'm looking for somebody in this area. So like the Liberty Tree where they posted notes about a militia meeting or a committee meeting or something like that, we can use the same thing. We can have our Liberty Tree and post notes up there. And that becomes the point, in a sense, that serves as the it replaces the horse for the committees of correspondence. You don't have to get on a horse and ride. You go to the Liberty Tree and see what's up there, post any notes, chat with people, talk with people. So we're trying to emulate as much as possible what happened back then because it worked. We know it worked.
it's the only time in history that we can really see where a where the people took their freedom and didn't end up in many several revolutions right afterwards.
Power struggles.
You know, continued power struggles like what happened in France and all the other countries that we've seen that have, you know, where the people have risen up and revolted and they end up with more tyrannical systems than what they started off with, or there was power struggles again and again and again. It's the only one that worked.
Thanks room for people like Napoleon.
So, you know, these were written out of our history books. They were written out of our encyclopedias for a reason. We were not taught about these for. I spoke with a gentleman. I believe he's in his 60s or his late 60s, early 70s. He vaguely remembers being taught about the committees of safety in school. That's how far back we have to go before we really find out that they were even still being taught somewhat. So if there's, you know, if they were important enough to delete from our history, then that means they were important to us, and there's a reason they don't want us to know about it. Keep that in mind. And also, there's another organization out there. Like, I've mentioned Dr. Vieira's name several times. You know, I've seen a few postings about committees of safety from them. You know, the committees were never a top-down organization. They were based on the township, the village, the hamlet, the county. And then those counties convened to form a state, and the state was subordinate to the counties. And then the states convened to form a national committee or a continental congress, and they were subordinate to the states. This other organization that is coming around, this other committee of safety, headed by Dr. Vieira, it's a very top-down organization with him being set in as the national leader. I cannot find any reference in history where the committees of safety were a top-down organization, a very centralized organization like our federal government. They were never like that, ever, in history, that I can find.
Let me use an analogy that Red Beckman used to use. Imagine a triangle, and at the top you have the President of the United States. Just below him you've got the House of Representatives and the Senate, the Congress. Below that you've got the rest of the federal government. Below that you've got the state government. Below that you've got the administrative agencies in the state government. Below that, you've got the county, below that, the city, and below that, right at the bottom, holding everything up, is the people. That's how we were taught in school that government operates. What we need to do, though, is turn that triangle upside down, where the people are at the top. We are the power. Read the Declaration. Read the Constitution. We are the most important part of both documents. It filters down. The bottom of that stack, not the top, but the bottom of that stack, is the President of the United States, because he's got to carry out the will of everybody above him. That's the proper role of government in this country.
I agree. So when you're looking at the committees, you know, read the information that we have posted that Gary has on, you know, that Gary has up on the committee.org site. Look at what the founding fathers say. And then when you run across these other references to the committees or these other organizations that are claiming to be committees, look at their organization and their structure and ask yourself, is this how the founding fathers implemented it? If not, then it's not the committees. It's something else, but it's not our committees of safety. And like everything else, you know, we seem to bastardize everything, and we seem to, we seem to have this revisionist theory on everything. And you know, let's take that idea, but let's make it something new and completely change it. No, I am so tired of that. If it wasn't broken in the past and it worked then, let it work again now. No more revisionism. No more interpretation. Let's stick to what worked. And for 100 years, the committees of safety, the militia, and our Constitution, and our individual, and our enforcement of our individual freedoms worked. It worked very well. And then we lost that somewhere. And so we take that back again, individually, and then on the county levels, you know, in our towns, and then on our counties, and then our state. You know, something else I was also thinking about recently, we had that Free State Project, the New Hampshire Free State Project, and that was all fine and well. You know, if you're taking all the people and you're moving them to one small area, you know, and a lot of people can't afford to move there, and New Hampshire is outrageously expensive, and who can afford that? I say we start taking back our states one county at a time. Let's try to, you know, maybe somebody should try and implement a free county project. Take over a small county. That might be an idea there. Put in your own sheriff, your own county, you know, your own county officials, and implement constitutional.
Draw a line and say no federal jurisdiction within these boundaries.
Draw that line and say no federal jurisdiction within these boundaries. We will not enforce. We will not enforce any laws that violate individual freedom or property rights. If you want the feds to come in here, you better check in with our sheriff. And the sheriff will make sure that you go and you do not violate anybody's freedoms. And if the sheriff needs help, we have a large militia here as well.
I've just posted a link.
We need a police force, you know, so we cut down expenses. We got a large militia. You know, if children need to be found, if manhunts need to be done, we have an able-bodied militia. And we have a committee of overall safety watching everything, making sure everything's running safely.
I just posted a link to Sons of Liberty number 14. I wrote it back in 1995. It's based on the Declaration and John Locke, and it has a concept of our relationship to government that it's a complex concept, but basically what it says is I cannot leave the government. I have signed the contract, and this goes against what Lysander Spooner says, but that's too bad. When I'm part of a social compact, I am bound by that compact. I have an obligation under that compact to have obedience to that government. So I cannot leave it. However, if the government breaches this contract, it divests me and removes me back to a state of nature. I have no government. I have lived that way for 17 years as far as my mindset and my relationship with government. That's the mindset that we need to develop and understand that concept, that we can't break it, but the government can. If they breach the contract, if they violate the tenets of that contract, they have divested themselves from that government by their actions. Even though they sit de facto, not de jure. De facto is because they're there. De jure is by right. So the government that sits in Washington is de facto now because of their breach of the contract. The de jure government, look to your left and look to your right when you're at a committee of safety meeting. That is the de jure government of this country.
Well, we are down to our last 2 minutes. I would encourage everybody to begin studying about the committees of safety. Really look at where your skills lie. You know, would you better serve in a militia, or are you better serving your community in a committee of safety? You know, I myself would much rather prefer a militia, but instead I would be joining a committee of safety because that's where I would better serve my community. Even when I was in militias, I always seemed to be the mouthpiece. I was always in the role of PR, recruitment, things like that, because that's where I best served that militia. Even though I would rather have been doing other things, that's where I served at. So, you know, really look within yourself. And also, put aside time each and every day to do something productive off the computer and in the community, to promote the Constitution, committees of safety, a militia, whatever it is, but engage every day. Do something. If you don't do something today, that's a day that you wasted, and that's a day further behind we are. It starts today. We have to start acting. We have to get off. We have to start engaging in productive action again. We have very little time to waste. We needed these last 20 years when they were militarizing to combat that. Now we're behind schedule. We need to catch up. So thank you, everybody, for coming on. Next show will be on, actually, I forgot what the next show is.
to be honest with you,
were we going to continue this subject next Tuesday?
Well, yes, we are. We're going to continue the subject next Tuesday. For right now, though, the next show is Survival Sunday. Militia Monday, we're going to have a Minuteman Militia coming on. Major Cross will be speaking with us. We've also got several other militia groups coming on, and some past guests that will be coming on as well. So look forward to the upcoming shows. Everybody take care. Wonderful. And we'll see you on next Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday for sure, and possibly sometime this in the later part of this week as well. Take care, everyone, and have a great week. Bye-bye.